ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes. Hey soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give TeamPlayer a look.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order.
Welcome to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This week, I had the privilege of interviewing Tony with Fort Worth Vaqueros. Fort Worth Vaqueros is a pro team out of Fort Worth. Not like North Fort Worth, Fort Worth, Fort Worth. Coach Tony shares the exciting news of the academy and the exciting news with Team One for the season. Their season starts here in a few weeks, so I'll let Coach Tony share all the fun news. I will give you a little bit of a heads up. I did tape this over 2 days, and I have my traditional intro. Then on day two, I had him start off with sharing his player history and coaching history. That is all I'm going to share for now, so let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
I'm Tony Mirola, Coach Tony Mirola. I'm currently the executive director for the Fort Worth Vaqueros Youth Club that we've currently launched a few weeks ago. I'm also the MPSL head coach for the semi-professional team that play in Fort Worth. Our season starts in May, and we play throughout the summer months and finish the first week in July. So a really, really busy schedule, busy person, got lots going on because we're a newly formed club based in the heart of Fort Worth out at Gateway Park. Looking forward to obviously giving the soccer players of Fort Worth and surrounding areas an opportunity to play on their doorstep and not having to travel 3 hours over the other side of the Metroplex to get coaching and to get games.
Starting at the team, your first team, how's that been going for you guys? I mean, I know you guys have been playing for a couple of seasons now, if not longer. I've only been following for a couple of seasons. So when did you guys start the Vaqueros, and when and you guys said, you said you start in May, so.
Yeah, May the 7th is our first game. We play local rivals, Denton Diablos. It's a Sunday night over at, you know, where they're playing this year. But we've been around for 10 seasons. This is our 10th season. And so that's why we've sort of launched the youth club to underpin everything that we do for the first team. We want to create that pathway from a U6 and a U7 player all the way through to, you know, semi-professional and representing the city of Fort Worth. So they've been going for 10 seasons playing in the MPSL. This is only my second season as head coach. And I came in on the back of a COVID disaster, should I say, where the club was going in the right direction. And once that came in, a lot of players obviously, you know, stopped playing and moved away. So we're currently made up of 80% local college players that come back into the city of Fort Worth and want to keep ticking over for the summer. And then we've probably got about 5 or 6 players in the squad who have always played for the Vaqueros, either ex-professionals or ex-indoor professionals who just want to keep ticking over. So we've got a blend of youth, athleticism, but also experience this year, which I think is, you know, it bodes pretty well. So my second year, first year was always stabilizing the ship. The second year, which is this year, you know, we want to get in the playoffs and then build on even more foundations that in year three, which is this time next year, we want to try and, you know, obviously compete for winning the conference. So we're getting lots of players in, lots of returning players from last year, but also attracting a lot of players from Division I programs who their head coaches just want to keep their players ticking over in the summer so that when they go back to college in August, they're not starting all over again. They're still, you know, they're still relatively fit.
So they're signing amateur contracts so they can still play college.
Yes, yeah, amateurs stroke semi-professional. Yeah,
awesome. That's very cool to hear. So your team, that's great. That's from the sounds of it, it's very diverse from experience. Do you guys have open tryouts then for the first team?
Yeah, the open tryouts we held 4 of them since I think we had one in November, January, February, and in April. And then across all 4 tryouts, we've probably had close to 200 players register, which
wow.
is absolutely unbelievable. We could have probably had, I probably could have made a first team, a reserve team, and probably an under 21s team, and potentially an under 19s team. That just tells you the growth of the game here in the city of Fort Worth to have, like I said, yeah, almost 200 people, players registered, and out of those 200 players, probably about 99.9% of them had a lot of quality. You know, the 1% or that small percentage was myself, because I signed up because I wanted to try out for the team, and I was the worst player there. So that tells you a lot about the quality of the players that that we attracted, not just the numbers perspective.
And that's impressive. I mean, 200 players. So is the goal is to expand the team to be a first team and a second team and possibly a U19 team, or is it to be more what you guys are currently? Because I know COVID has changed a lot of things for the soccer world here locally.
Yeah, no, I think our 5-year plan is we want to have a professional team. We want to Fort Worth Vaqueros to be the pro team here in Fort Worth. The MPSL, which is the league that we're playing in, has plans to potentially form a professional league. I know last year the league was talking a lot about creating a U16 and a U19 academy, so that when the first teams are playing each other, so see example, say we're playing Irvine or we're playing Lubbock, our 16s and 19s would play either prior to that game or have some type of schedule where, you know, they would play games. So There's big plans for them to promote the league even more. So eventually it would be the NPSL that we're playing in now would actually become the reserve team. We'd have a first team, which would then obviously be the pro team. And then we'd have the U16s and 19s that would hopefully play in that the NPSL Academy League. But then that's where our youth club, and I'm sure we'll get to cover this later, that's where the youth club comes into place, is that we constantly have a stream of players coming through our system to filter into the 16s, the 19s, the reserve side, the 21s, and then ultimately the first team. And we're actually looking at mirroring that next year by potentially launching a WPSL women's team here in Fort Worth, which would be, ticking all the boxes, so to say.
I mean, that would check the box for the DFW area to be a capital city, from not a capital city, but a major soccer city in the country. That's the one thing that we're missing, is a large women's presence in amateur and pro level. That's one reason why DFW is not considered a soccer city in the United States, because we did not have a women's team.
And that's unfortunate because our owner is, he's a successful businessman, but I like working with him even more so because he's a soccer guy. He gets it, he understands it. And with the World Cup coming to DFW in the next 3.5 years, I think he's understood and realized that what happens when the World Cup leaves here, there's going to be a lot of kids. If you think the game is imploding a little bit now and getting bigger and bigger, you wait till that World Cup comes here. So I think the city of Fort Worth, we have to have more facilities where kids are going to continuously be playing on decent fields. And in that turn, part of my job is to obviously oversee and recruit coaches, and educate the coaches into our Vaqueros way, should I say, so that when a 10-year-old comes into our program, maybe earlier, we have potentially 6 or 7 years with that player before that player can maybe go and play in the first team, whether that's the pro team or the reserve team. Unfortunately, we can't do that with just one or two coaches. It needs an army of us and good coaches who buy into our values. So it's a pretty exciting time to be a soccer player in Fort Worth, but it's also a pretty exciting time to be prospective new coaches that are wanting to get on the ladder as well.
That's great. Now, with your players coming, since we're talking about the academy side also, you guys just launched your academy a few weeks ago to be, my understanding, all age groups now. How are you guys going to attract your coaches then? Because for me, that's what, as a parent, I have learned, the coach makes the world of a difference. Wins, losses don't matter. We've talked about that. It's about the development of the player and that connection with the player. It's how I use my kids, because that's what they are. It's how my kids connect with the coach. And how are you going to attract the coaches to the club right now with just starting off? And how many teams are you guys hoping to have starting in July?
I think the biggest plus that we've got for attracting coaches is that we have an extension to our pathway where other clubs don't have. Other clubs go up to like U18 or U19, and then players normally go off to college. What we're saying is we can provide that pathway at the Fort Worth Vaqueros, but also we can open up bigger avenues that if players have the talent. We can help them get into obviously our first team, which within the next, 3 to 5 years, is hopefully going to be, professional. We're also looking at working with the city to try and see if we can potentially get something going with a, potential stadium, potential training grounds, because something like that would obviously interest and be of value to the city of Fort Worth, because players. Teams are coming in from out of state, so obviously filling up the hotels, filling up the restaurants, and I think it's that whole professional environment that we're trying to bring. Right now, we don't have the elite platforms to play on, because obviously we're new. We're working with some perspective leagues right now, so that's probably the hardest job that I'm going to have, is that why the Vaqueros? Why should the top coaches come to us? And we're going to be selective, and we're going to be picky about who we bring in. We're not going to be looking at bringing coaches in because they've got 10, 12, 15 teams. I ain't going to do that because unfortunately I don't like firing people. So if I bring people in, they're going to have to be people that are going to be on this journey with us for the next 3 to 5 years minimum. So to answer your question, it'll be pretty difficult and challenging, but it's the city of Fort Worth. And if you're a native and if you were born or if you've been in Fort Worth for long enough, you know that by representing your city as a coach and helping develop the next generation of players should be hopefully enough to to bring these coaches in. We're pretty competitive with our fees. We pay our coaches well. We look after them from a coach education stipend. So we give them a stipend every year for them to go and use for whatever they want to use it. But it has to be a coach education perspective. It might go towards their B license. It might go towards flights, towards going, to the convention. And also we're trying to look after our families by telling them that the first tournament that they have or the first local tournament they want to play is on the club. You don't have to pay any extra fees or get any extra fees for that because that's on us.
This is a tricky question just because I feel like a lot of clubs struggle with it. Are the fees going to be on par with the rest of the area for the players to coming in, or is there an avenue to help parents with the fees, or how are you guys going to set this up then?
We are lower, and trust me, I've been part of clubs and I know what some clubs are charging, and I know obviously what they pay the coaches. Our fees are considerably lower than other ones, but it is on a case by case situation. With me being the executive director, if there are families let me rephrase it. I'll never let finance stop a kid from playing soccer. It's as simple as that. Because fortunately for me, when I was growing up, we didn't have much money ourselves, but in the UK or in Wales where I lived, there was never a pay to play model. It was actually getting to training, getting to facilities because we didn't have a car. So I know the barriers and how difficult it is to be a soccer player, here in the US with the pay to play model. So we have to make sure that if parents are paying, there are customers there. We have to provide a service and not just the 6 weeks before tryouts. It has to be year round. And I think that's what I've been pretty successful in, or, wherever I've been within the clubs, is that we've always made sure that customer service, that service of developing players, and hence I say developing players, is what parents are playing for. They're not paying to be on a Division One classic team or a ECNL top team because they can put the car sticker on the window of the car. But it's like your kid might be on that team, he might be playing at that level, but are they playing? Are they developing? Are they enjoying themselves? Are they getting anything out of the game? So when it comes to finances and stuff, we'll never let that be a barrier. Or we can obviously break down that barrier, but at the end of the day, it is expensive for us as a club to do that because we want to be able to pay our coaches well. We want to be able to get the best coaches and make sure that they're being compensated for their time. We have a good facility at Gateway Park, which we have to pay for as well. The leagues that we want to play in, they're not free, referees, et cetera, liability forms. So we can't, we can't undercompensate it, but we do know that, the fees that we are charging are competitive, with most of it going back towards the coach and the families.
Like to hear that as a parent. I mean, that's what's important. I mean, my kids have been fortunate, but there's many kids that soccer is their pathway of life and family. And sometimes there's other avenues that get in their way of the players playing, like you said. With that being said, you guys are holding open practices right now. You said Tuesdays and Thursdays. And if I'm remembering right, Tuesdays are U10 and younger, then Thursdays are U11 through U18, correct?
Yeah, correct. So as of right now on Tuesdays, we're not really catering for the U6 and U7. We're actually going to be developing and promoting a Friday night skills session for those younger ones, because we feel that U6 and U7 to throw them kids straight into small-sided games is not going to be beneficial for them because they've not really got the technical foundation. So Tuesdays, we're going U8 to U10s, and that's from 6 to 7.15. And then at 7.15, when they finish, the first team come in slightly earlier, and then they get to mingle and get to talk with the young kids. The kids get to like get autographs and pictures with the older players. And then on Thursday, it's the U11 to U18. And they're the same times, and it's all at Gateway Park. And as of this morning, we have, and we're not exaggerating this, we have 235 kids that have registered or signed up for the open pickup game. So if everybody shows up at the same time, I think we're going to need a bigger field or an extra field. But that just shows you yet again the popularity of the sport and people just kids wanting to come out. That's not that's 235 players from U6 all the way through to U17, U18, which is for the first week, it's unbelievable.
Still crazy numbers. Doesn't matter where you're at, who you are at. I mean, to get that many kids signed up wanting to come out or parents wanting to have their kids to come out is amazing, especially in the DFW area. I feel like we are a hot spot of talent in this area. And I feel like after I've interviewed a few clubs, they're right saying that we are in an area that could probably create our own national team to compete with the US national team on any given day, because we have so much talent in the area. You talked about development. So what's the club's philosophy starting with the academy then with development and how to recognize development and things along that line?
I think the main key is educating the parents and letting the parents know that the method behind our madness. So what I've created is from my background as a UEFA A license holder, I have an academic background in, I have a master's of improving and implementing decision-making capabilities in youth team players. So like from the practical side and the academical side, I've sort of created our own or my own like sort of game model and set of principles that every player has to improve on and has to implement. In the younger age groups from the U6 through our U10s, it's all about technical. It's all about technique. It's all about the technical development. Because what I first seen when I came to the US in 2014 was coaches were trying to work a lot on tactics, but technically they couldn't perform the tactic. So they were asking kids to switch play, for example, and they couldn't even receive the ball on the back foot. So we're building for that key age group where it U14 to U16 window, where the tactics should start being introduced more than the technical perspective. So all we focus on is technical repetitions, lots of decision-making, small-sided games, getting kids to make their own decisions, setting the environment for them to obviously make mistakes, but understand where the mistakes happened and how they can improve on it. So for us, it's like a building block. It's like building a house. We don't want to put the roof on the house without having the right foundation on, you know, and you've probably heard that, you know, many times before, but I didn't read that from a book. That's just common sense, you know. If you ain't got the foundations in place, you're gonna struggle when you put the cap on the you know on the top, so to say. So all we focus on is technical work, 1v1s, 2v2s, lots of overloads, lots of 3v2 situations, lots of transitions. But most importantly, the kids having fun and everything they do, 85% of it is with the ball. The other 15% is going to be some type of agility work, not running around the field three laps or doing push-ups because they gave the ball away in the 2v1 situation. It's all agility-based and everything that's specific to soccer.
Love it, love it, love it. I mean, it's hard to find clubs, and I feel like you're at the point where you're at the pinnacle point of where you guys can dictate everything for your coaches and what you guys want out of it. Like you said, you want the coaches to follow your philosophy that you guys have already set up starting to implement, so coaches coming in will have to follow it and there'll be that process. Are you guys going to have software that helps coaches coach through the process to help so you guys are all on the same page, or are you guys going to be more you teach the philosophy, you tell them what you want the philosophy of the club is, and then the coaches have to help figure out how they need to do it on their own?
Yeah, no, it's we do have a software that we're using that I've used for probably the last 8 or 9 years since I've been here. It's a good mate of mine, and I'm sure he won't mind me giving him a free little bit of marketing here. But we use Sports Session Planet, which is an online digital library that has animated sessions that I've created my own portfolio over. There's probably over 400 sessions I've obviously created in there. They're just a guide for coaches. I'm all for if they have ideas, different ideas, they can put sessions in as well, and they can implement it. But what I'm saying is, as long as our principles are four, we have four key principles, which I'm not gonna tell, because that's our little Bible, so to say. But as long as our principles of play are included in everything that our coaches do, I'm totally fine within the structure. There's a session structure that we adhere to, but what they do within that session structure is down to the coach. We want our players to be what I call independent thinkers. If I'm saying that to our players, I've also got to say that to our coaches. It's like, listen, show me what you've got. As long as it's within these parameters of these are our four key principles. No matter what system of play you do, no matter what session you play, or no matter if it's a 4-4-2 or 4-3-3, it doesn't matter. Our principles of play stay the same, and it all fits inside a game model, which is part of a sort of an interview process for coaches coming in. This is our principles. This is our game model. Are you in? Do you understand it? Do you buy into it? Because if not, maybe this is not the place for you. And you're right saying it's not as if I've started this job where I've gone into a big club where there's 80 coaches who already have their mindset of how the game should be played. I've tried doing that before, and you can't change everyone's coaching mindset because everyone's got different opinions. The beauty of what we're doing is that it's brand new, it's totally new, and you're right, we're starting from scratch. And if people want to be part of it and understand how we want to develop our players for the future, this is it. And if not, hey, no hard feelings. We'll both go our separate ways.
Liking hearing that. With your coaching, are you guys going to be looking for younger, less experienced coaches so you guys can shape and mold coaches of how you like them to be? Because I feel like there's too many older coaches that are out there that are stuck in their ways and they will not change.
It's funny you said that because I've got a mixture of both. The beauty of us right now is that some of our Vaqueros players who have come out of college and have come back to the city of Fort Worth will be playing for us next year. But they're the types of guys that already know our principles of play. They know our game model. So they're our future coaches who would be working in the younger age groups because they get it. They buy into it. It's an easier transition for them to stay involved in the game. But also I'm making lots of links. I'm still currently a high school coach, and I made relationships with all the Fort Worth ISD coaches around here. They're the ones that I'm working with. So I'm working with middle school coaches, high school coaches who are thriving for something like this. Because ultimately it's going to make, if we're working with addition some players, grade 7 and 8, for example, year round, that's going to benefit the high school coaches program in 3-4 years time. So what I'm seeing is a lot of high school coaches are on board with this, because now we're saying to the coaches, listen, I can help improve your program by having your best players from your program play together with kids from another school. And when it comes January, February, March, they're off. They're all yours. So all the high school coaches are very much on board because they're like, hang on, well, you're helping us build our players for the future, and you're not going to steal them. And no, I'm not going to not no one to steal them. I'm actually going to work with you as well. So I'm actually we're actually providing a service for the high school programs now for their kids to play year round. Because what I've seen is that lots of players at high school level will go and play. Some of them will actually go and play adult soccer because they don't want to drive over to the other side of the Metroplex because one, it's too expensive, two, it's too far, and three, they just literally can't get there. So we're bringing that service now to their doorstep. So we're getting Vaqueros players, current and past, who want to get involved in the younger age groups. And then obviously the middle school and high school coaches who are helping us use some of their facilities also to bring these programs to the kids' doorsteps. It's really exciting and it's really neat.
Really exciting time to be in Fort Worth playing soccer from the sounds of it. Never got your story as a player and how you got into coaching.
My story is it's pretty, I wouldn't say unique, but I sort of fell into it. Obviously, I played at Wrexham from 92 to 95, made my debut when I was 17, got a pro contract when I was 18. And then obviously thought I made it. Probably made my debut too early. I just thought things were going to fall into me. So I sort of my foot off the gas a little bit. And then after like 12 months, I had a hernia operation, which I thought would have given me another year's contract, and it didn't. So I went back and played semi-pro for my local hometowns, where I was able to get a job as well. So I was working, able to go out with my mates on a Friday night. And obviously after 3 months, I've obviously realized, gosh, what's happened here? You know, what have I done? Tried to get back into it, but obviously it was too late by then. So I played in the lower level leagues for about 10, 12 seasons. Unfortunately, I broke my leg after a year from leaving Wrexham. And then a few years later, ruptured both my Achilles tendons. Within 18 months of each other. So that slowed me down. And at the age of 29 was the last time I got injured. And literally I was like, I can't put my body. I ended up being a player manager for my local town where I lived at the time, a team called Mould Alexandra, who I owe so much to, because they gave me that first opportunity of coaching. And my mate at the time was the manager, and he was a successful businessman. And he said, listen, we've got 7 games to go. Can you just see the season out? I can't do it through work. And I got a reaction from the players. And I think we won 6 of the 7 and I managed to stay up. We didn't get relegated. And that's how I got into it. You know, just by default, really. So I started coaching 30, 31, got my badges, or started to go through my badges, but always had the burning desire to come and live and work in America, because my sister lived in Fort Worth, so for years I was coming on vacation and or holiday to see her. But obviously realized I needed to get like some type of academic background. So at 31, 32, went back to college, university, got myself a degree, then obviously continued that, got myself a master's in sports science, completed the A license, and then managed to get an interview. Well, not an interview, managed to come over to Fort Worth with a guy called Jimmy Melia, who played for Liverpool in the 50s and 60s under the great Bill Shankly, and did a session with him. He obviously introduced me to his boss. They got me a visa, and that was in 2014. And, you know, the whole objective was me to come over and earn a little bit of extra money, experience America, take some money back to the UK with me, buy a house, and the rest is history. Where 9 years later, I'm now married, I'm a father, and I'm skint. I got no money, so that plan worked out pretty well, to be fair. But I wouldn't change it for the world, man. I really wouldn't. People say I'm lucky to do what I do, and I disagree. I'm fortunate enough to do what I do, because I've worked my damn backside off to get where I am. So in a nutshell, that's how I got into coaching by default.
That's amazing. I mean, everyone's story is slightly different, and the path that you take and the cross, and that I'm amazed that you have a master's. And you went back to school at 31, you said?
31, 3 years to do a degree. And then I think I was 30, 2011 and 12. So 10 years ago, 11 years ago, I went back to do a master's of research. Because I always wanted to find out what makes an elite player elite and a non-elite player non-elite. What's the differences? And I found out it's literally technique. That's what makes an elite player better and more elite, because of their technical proficiencies, and they understand technically how to do and perform the tactic, which was really, really interesting.
That's phenomenal. So this explains more of your culture you've created, and as you said yesterday, your Bible that you've created to build what you're trying to do with the Vaqueros. So as we talked yesterday, are you guys doing a start from the bottom up, so to speak, start with the younger age groups and slowly build your way up? Are you guys saying try to get a team in as many age groups as possible for your academy?
The plan is to eventually have maximum two teams in each age group, boys and girls. So, and you know, an elite team and a non-elite team, should I say, and try and bridge that gap to make the players, you know, as best as they can, really. So there's no particular order which way I want to do it. It's you know, there's no rush in this. The objective obviously is to start U6 and U7s, and that gives us at least 8 to 10 years working with those players or those age groups. And then obviously after 10 years, every year then is producing players. So year 11, you've always got players coming through the system. We are on a bit of a time crunch because MPSL are hopefully launching next year, a U16 and U19 league. So that's something that I'm going to have to try and fill in. So I've put my name on those two age groups to build this year, knowing that when that league comes, we're going to have, you know, successful players and successful teams.
And those were U16 and what was the other age group?
U16 and U18, U19.
Yeah, those are crucial years for building a first team clubs. I'll use it this way. Certain clubs in the area that will, as a coach progresses, they'll move the coach from, let's say, you have coach A that is doing a great job coaching and developing at a younger age group. Will you guys eventually be switching coaches around, or do you guys plan on having that coach bring up that age group, or are you guys going to have coaches that stay at a certain age groups to coach their way up? So if you are a U6, U7 coach, that's the age group you'll be coaching for a while. Then you'll have a coach for the next age group and they'll just pass it along, or will the coaches follow the transition with the players?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. I think I do believe that coaches and players need different voices and different mindsets. So the maximum a coach would be with one age group would probably be 2, maximum 3 years. And it's all about the individual coach. So if a coach is a specialist in U13 to U15, the long-term goal is to keep that coach in that age group and make his specialities even better than what they are. I'm not going to go and ask a coach who, you know, at the end of the day, we're all coaches. We should be able to coach a U6 through a U19. That's where I do. But certain coaches have certain skill sets that are going to be beneficial to our club. So I think the biggest thing that, the only reason why coaches stay with their teams for 5, 6, 7, 8 years is one thing and one thing only, and that's security. It gives them a paycheck every year. It gives them a paycheck every month. And I totally get that because we've all got families and we all in this day and world, you know, want that little bit of extra cash to help us get through difficult times right now. So if we were to have a coach in every age group or a coach that would oversee 2 or 3 age groups, that gives them 3 years security with a team, and then they recycle back into it in 3 years and do it again. That's the ultimate goal for me, because it ticks all our boxes, gives the coach security, and obviously makes the coach want to be where that coach is at because that's their skill set in that certain area, if that makes sense.
Yes, and this comes to the next question I have, because it comes down to roster sizes for all your teams. Now, I know I can use, there are some clubs in the area that all the coaches are salary. It doesn't matter how many players they have on roster, which means they want the as many touches for players as possible, you can say, versus having a huge roster and collecting a paycheck. Are you guys planning on having something along the lines for the coaches to be more secure so they don't have to have, I know a coach that has 60 something girls that he coaches, and as a parent, that's kind of a red flag, because how do you maintain a connection with all 60 kids?
Yeah. And again, at the end of the day, that's why we eventually want to get two age groups. We don't want to be carrying squads or rosters of one age group of 22 players. Now, when he gets to the older age groups, the high school age groups, the U16 and U17, we need 18 to 20 players on each roster because kids are playing high school, kids get injured, that type of stuff. So from that perspective, we're doing that for the right reasons, because we want bigger rosters, because kids will not be unavailable because their bodies are growing, and obviously high school can really, you know, burn some of these kids out. But at the younger age groups, no, we probably don't want any more than three or four subs per age group. Now, obviously, we also have to be careful that we can't afford to pay our coaches a top end salary if every single kid is on some type of scholarship, or you've only got 10 players and it's a 9v9 situation, but the coach wants, you know, X, Y, and Z. So we have to be careful, because at the end of the day, it is a pay-to-play model. It is a sort of a business. But we have to be really careful that we don't want kids that be sitting. We don't want kids to be sitting on the bench. We have to have them playing. And if we have to go in with one or two or three subs, you know, so be it.
I've always heard as a developing competitive team in a competitive team. And that's how they've always described it, because either you're at a competitive level and you called it an elite level. Will you guys shuffle players around between those two squads then, or will you guys keep it for the 10-month cycle so the parents know the schedule?
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, it's a sort of case-by-case situation. Again, you know, if a player is at the, you know, let's say he's at the elite level, within our club, but that player is struggling, they might go through some type of maturation or some type of growth spurt. It might be better for that individual player to drop down, and vice versa with players that are in the development squad. If a player scored in 4 or 5 goals every game, yeah, it's great for the team, it's great for the coach, but it's not really great for the kid or the individual, because it's too easy. So that would be on a case by case situation. We would do something like that if it's in the best interest of the individual. But those conversations would be with parents, and it wouldn't be a case of, right, your kid is doing really well, now he's going to be on this team. It would be the communication factor with those parents would be, hey, if your kid keeps doing what he's doing or what she's doing, be prepared that this is what could happen. So it's not a shock if that kid gets moved up, but also it won't be a shock if that kid gets the play down. It's that communication to the parents of, like, this is what we believe is best for that individual player.
Yeah, that's great. I feel like too often players get locked in. At least you can, I mean, there's more of the player pool as you continue on. I mean, it's not like your rosters are completely locked in depending on the league. With league play, are you guys planning on joining the Alphabet Soup leagues out there, the ECNLs and RPL and Classic League and all them?
Yeah, I think because we're based in Fort Worth and because of our training program in Fort Worth, we want to try and make it as convenient as possible for our players and families more than anything. So we are in talks right now with a couple of platforms. I need to figure out which one's going to be the best for us for our games program. So, for example, we wouldn't be entering a league if all our games are going to be in McKinney. Or all our games are going to be, you know, over in Frisco. That defeats the object of what we're trying to do. So we are talking to a platform right now where we're hoping that 50% of our games will be based in Fort Worth, and the other ones will be in Plano. So it's literally like a home and away schedule, where one weekend we're in Fort Worth and then the other weekend we might be in McKinney, or we might be in Plano, for example. So the ultimate goal, yeah, there's lots of platforms out there. I'm hoping by the time that we're established, the MPSL has some type of platform to offer us with other MPSL teams. But yet again, we don't want to jump into a platform where we're going to be getting beat 5-6-7-0 every week. But also, we don't want to go into a league where we're going to be winning 6-7-8-0 every week. So it's trying to get that fine balance of, where do we fit in? What's best for our teams? What's best for our players? What's best for families? And over the coming probably 6 to 7 days, we'll probably announce which platform we're going to be playing on that's going to be beneficial from our perspective for our players and families.
Awesome. I ask because I know that you guys have right now, you have your semi-professional team that, with the Vaqueros, I can never enunciate it correctly. And your goal is to move on. I know that the MLS is looking at expanding the MLS Next Pro platform outside of the MLS. Is that something you guys would look into in the future, or are you guys going to try to look more towards the USL and leagues like that?
Yeah, I think they're ongoing conversations right now. Obviously, the MLS is the top tier. And then how it works within the pyramid that's been structured now. You've literally got the MLS at the top, and then underneath it you have the USL, which is the championship. So, you know, your FC Tulsa's, which I was fortunate enough to be at, you know, work with them prior to COVID. They've got a great program, a great youth program that obviously, you know, goes with that too. And then underneath that, in the third pyramid, you've got your USL 1, which is professional as well. And then you've got like the semi-professional tier underneath it, which is ourselves, MPSL, which is USL 2. They're also in there. And then the third one is, I think it's NISA, or maybe NISA are in the same champion, same bracket as USL 1. So it's all geared up towards, you know, this pyramid structure. But as of right now, we just want to see how the MPSL goes. Our owner he sits on the board, and I speak to him regularly, and the plans and meetings that they have for their league is pretty significant right now. So as of right now, I can't answer that question correctly. But I think moving forward, you know, we will definitely have opportunities within the MPSL bracket to, you know, continue moving up that pyramid, hopefully.
That's awesome. No, it just never know. This is the one area I do not know a lot about, is this in between world of for the semi pros and the soccer world here in the United States. As I've dived more into it, I've learned a lot more. Like you have the Denton Diablos, which is just what, a 40-minute drive for you guys?
Yeah. 30 minutes up 35. I think that's the first game that we play this season, May the 7th at their place. So yeah, good program, good team, going in good directions they are as well. So to have someone to be able to play like that on our local doorstep is pretty good.
It's amazing how, and now I was looking at the conferences. So your conference is here in Texas, and then some, it looks like Oklahoma and New Mexico. Is that correct?
They're not in our conference. No, luckily our conference is a 12 game season. So we play 6 home, 6 away. We don't get to play everybody twice, just because of the shortness of the season. But we do know that if we had the resources to do it, we could probably make it into a 16, 20 league season. We play down in Laredo, Brownsville. There's teams obviously in Lubbock and Midland. So they're all like sort of spread out. The local ones here, obviously, it's a Denton, and then Irvin FC are in it. They rebranded to Gallos, I think, this season, if I've said that right. So if anyone from Irvin is listening to that, please don't give me a hard time over my pronunciations over that. And there's some good teams like San Antonio, Houston. There's a team out in Austin that will be playing. So really good, some really good teams with some really good players. It's a tough conference. Normally, if you win the Texas Conference, you go pretty deep into the playoff rounds, because it's such a good conference.
So is there with the NPSL, is there a relegation and promotion then?
No, there's not. There's not that. I wish there was a promotion relegation a little bit higher up the pyramid, because you might see scenes that you probably witnessed this past weekend with my club, Wrexham, getting promoted to the Football League. It's obviously a different structure that they have that they have over there compared to here. But no, there's no promotion or relegation. The only promotion you can sort of get by winning the conference or getting in the playoffs is to move into like the you know, the national rounds of MPSL.
Okay. Now with, oh crud, I was writing everything down and I lost my train of thought.
It's all good.
It's all dealing with, because it, I'm gonna have to edit this out, but I'm looking, comparing it to the FC Dallas world, because I feel like you guys are trying to not mirror the MLS, the academy to the pros, but it's the same idea. But I feel it's more of the European, sounds more European model than the American model, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it is, because that's my expertise. I've lived it as a player. I've lived it as a coach, and I've seen how it works, how it benefits clubs over there, in not just in the UK, but obviously, you know, throughout Europe. And I think the USL Academy, or there's the USL have their own academy that they're forming, like a USL Academy, and it's very European based. It's a very European based model. Whereas I'm not sure whether you know, but the MLS own the players. So if a player gets sold from an MLS club, that most of that money goes back to the actual MLS. What I like about USL is that the clubs own the players. So if an FC Tulsa or whoever, you know, play in the USL model, they own the players. So if they produce a player of their own and they go and sell them to a German or a French or a Spanish club, they get the money for the player to invest back in their academy system or back into their facilities, which I think is the way forward. You know, if we are, you know, the Vaqueros, we're looking for that next player from Fort Worth to make it big. And then if we get to sell that player on for wherever money there is, that then gets reinvested back into the youth academy or back into the youth system, so that we can keep continuing that conveyor belt of players that, you know, that come through.
That answers my next question. So for players' transitions, when you guys build your academy up, will you guys, when they turn 16, I know that's when you guys normally get, my understanding, in the EPL or the Spanish leagues, they can sell the player contract to another club, and then, like you said, reinvest the money. Are you guys hoping to be able to do that in the future then, if parents and players are agreeing to those type of contracts?
100%, yeah. I think that's the whole end goal, is that we want to provide those opportunities to players to go and play MLS, go and play in Europe. We want to provide those opportunities and those avenues, those pathways to, you know, to go and play. And if we, you know, there's a strong market right now, and not many European clubs over the last 10 years have probably took American soccer players serious, if I'm completely honest. But over the past 10 years, I've seen American coaches who have blown me away, who are like, the detail, the tactical detail, the technical attributes, you know, their parents might have played soccer, so now they're invested in it. They're putting that back into the players. If we can create a model where we're constantly providing those opportunities to players to go and play, but then, you know, European clubs are offering us potential revenue to put back into our club. That's how the European models work. You know, there's a famous Premier League club now whose academy, and I'm not going to say any names or who it is, but you know, a very successful team, but their academy is literally, it's like a business. They're not creating players for their first team no more. They're creating players for championship teams and lower level Premier League teams, and the turnover of their revenue is extremely high, because they're churning out top players and developing top players, not for their first team, but for other teams, because they have the staff, they have the facilities, they have the infrastructure to do that. It really is amazing. And if we can bring a touch of that to the city of Fort Worth and our program, I know we're going to be very, 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 very successful and around for a long, long time.
Now, that being said, what type of avenues do you have for players to leave, to go to, for an example, off to college to go play, or planning on having, since you guys are at that avenue, planning on having to go to college or moving to moving to possibly going over to Europe to go play, or go play in Brazil, wherever it may be, or Japan or China to go play soccer. Do you guys have an avenue?
Yeah, there's two pathways, basically. If they want to go down the college route, I have dozens of college coaches that reach out to me every February, March, wanting their top-end players to come and play for the Vaqueros. I know the clubs, obviously, in the NPSL, because they want their players to keep ticking over in the summer so that when they go back to them in August, they're pretty fresh. So... And all we need to know is that if that's a pathway that players want to go down, we have a database of colleges, college coaches, but their academics have to be spot on. So if they want to go and play in college and their schoolwork is not as at the standard it needs to be at, I don't care how good they are, they're not going to be accepted. So college pathway, academics is number one. Obviously, you've got to have a little bit about you. You've got to be a decent player also. But then the problem we come into with finding avenues to go and play in Europe is obviously visa stipulations, you know, especially in the UK with Brexit and stuff. There are avenues around there, but unfortunately, a lot of the British clubs, European clubs, want to find out where their best players are, you know, from their hometowns or their home countries. What we are seeing now, though, is that these top clubs are now looking at your USLs, your MLSs, you know, the academies to send players over there. So even though visa stipulations could be an issue, there are ways around it if the player they deem is at that level. There's things that they can get around, but we're talking high end players here. So two pathways, you know, academic, college, have to be good with your grades, have to obviously be a good player. But then obviously from the opposite side, there are pathways to go into Europe too, just mainly because of the contacts and the people that I know within the game.
Awesome. Now, with that being said, you talked about grades. Do you guys prep these? Will you guys have programs? Like I said, I don't know. I know what teams I've seen out on the field and what I've looked up on your website. Do you guys have are you guys going to build like a college prep program so these kids can be ready for college? So when a college does come to you and ask you about players, you can say, I have X, Y, and Z. This is how they're doing. Or do you have something else in the works? Or is that just focusing on building the academy and then you'll get to that?
Yeah, the college side is probably going to be in year two, possibly year three, where once our business is up and running, well, then probably try and employ a full-time college prep person who can come in and do that. As of right now, that probably falls under my job title as executive director. So yeah, that will definitely be on the radar. But yeah, again, that's not going to be until year two and year three, and then that's when we have a fully fledged, you know, academy. Where we have them two routes. You're going to go in college. This is the person we talk to. If this is the professional route you'd like to go down, this is our pathway too.
Awesome. It's amazing being able to watch this grow over the next several years, to watch you guys expand how the club grows and the avenues you guys take. Now, as a parent, I look at what's in the best interest of my players. Will you guys have like food and nutritionists that players will be able to talk to, and not medical staff, but like physical therapists when parents have questions? Or, I mean, my son just went through the whole process this year of Sievers disease and the growth pain playing just by walking every day. Will you guys have people on staff to talk to parents about that, then advise them to go talk to the medical professionals or to give guidance or advice to?
Yeah, we already have two people that work with the first team. Who have their own, they're basically like practitioners. They have their own practices in Fort Worth. So that's probably going to be year four and five. That's the icing on the top of the cake, should I say, to have people like that in, you know, like match analysts, you know, full-time recruitment officers. That's a fully fledged professional soccer club, what European clubs have had, who have been around for, you know, 100 years. So we won't have anyone like that in place who works full time, But yeah, for people and players and parents, we will be doing seminars where we will invite the people who work with our first team players throughout the year to do some type of education on nutrition and injury prevention and all that type of stuff. We'll probably do that throughout the year. We could start that next year. But as far as having someone full time in, that's a few years away. But yeah, no, it's a big part of player development. You know, we could train them all we want, but then if they jump in the car with mum and dad and they go and grab a burger from McDonald's and stuff, it just defeats the object, you know. So I think it's an education side of important to the parents, because unfortunately some parents might not know what to eat, might not know what to put in their bodies, you know, when to eat is the most important thing too. So yeah, we will have options and opportunities like that to let parents know what we do from that perspective.
You have a lot of things ahead. That sounds like you guys are going to have a great facility as a program behind everything, the network behind you guys. As you guys are building this up, are you guys hoping to jersey sponsorships to help for the academy level to help reduce costs then?
Yeah, unfortunately, you just missed it. We our general manager, you know, Anthony does a remarkable job with sponsorships. And we do logos for, you know, the youth academies, the first team, the shorts, the warm-up jerseys, and it goes in every year into like a lottery to see who gets to do the front of the jersey. We have to be careful because a lot of our sponsors are restaurants and bars, so you know we can't have certain breweries on the back of a, you know, U12 youth kit, you know. So we have to be careful how we do that type of stuff. But there are so many little businesses that are growing by the week that are supporting the Fort Worth Vaqueros. It's not even funny the amount of people that come out and watch and want to be part of what we're doing. We're also, you know, from sponsorship opportunities. That's the beauty of what we have here with our youth club, is that we're not solely reliant on parent fees and parent contributions and fundraisers. We have big sponsors that obviously see the bigger picture too.
That's awesome. I mean, that's critical for what you get your from my understanding of your mission, trying to make soccer accessible for all. Who has been the greatest influence as you as a player when you were younger, and now who is the greatest influence on you as a coach?
So as a player, it was two people. Obviously, it was my late grandfather who passed away in 2006, and he would come and pick me up. Unfortunately, my father worked permanent nights, so it was difficult for him to obviously get me to practice. So my grandfather did it, and he was one of the inspirations in me, because you know when you're a player, you have a bad game when you're like 13, 14, and he would always have something confident. He'd always find something good to say, which, you know, stuck with me. And, you know, I owe that guy so, you know, so much. So he was a big, big influence for me. And then, you know, obviously as a player or as a coach, there's too many to mention, but I would definitely say there's three people who, from a coaching perspective, who've been a big influence on me. And two of them are ex-Liverpool legends who I've get to see as friends. So Joey Jones is a Wrexham and Liverpool legend and Wales legend, who literally told me and explained to me and educated me into do the right things all the time, and to do things when people are not watching. Don't just do things because people are watching. It's like, do things when people are not watching, because you don't know when people are watching, if that makes sense. And that always stuck with me. And obviously Jimmy coming over, you know, Bill Shankly, who basically fought, you know, Mr. Liverpool, so to say, very similar things when I came to America. He's like, Tony, just tell the truth, do the right things, buy the right thing, do the right things to the right people. And just inspired me so much, because two absolute legends, but two of the most humblest guys I've ever known. You know, never bragged, never been modest at all. But then the other one is my, and she probably won't be listening to this, but it's probably my wife. She has put up with so freaking much of me on Saturday nights. If we lose a game, or if I'm watching a game of Wrexham and we lose and we win, it's up and down, up. And she has been one of my biggest advocates. And how she has stayed with me for almost 7 years now, because I can be so moody and just so a pain in the backside. So for her to still put up with what I do, and for all the wives out there, for all the soccer widows, should I say, who are with coaches, it can be a really unsociable job, you know, because you work more or less every night on the training field, and then you're out on the weekends, so, you know, for games. So they're the three figures that I can say. And if I've not mentioned your name to anybody else that's listening to this podcast, it's probably because I forgot about you and you've not made that impression on me. So haha, I'm joking, by the way.
Hey guys, thanks for listening this week to Chat by the Pitch. I know this week's episode is coming out on Monday, and this is a bonus episode, but I hope you guys enjoyed Tony's message about the Vaqueros and what is to come for this pro team and their academy that's attached to them. I hope you guys will give them a shot, and until next time, we'll see you at the pitch.